After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
It's been a while since we've been able to do, like, a kind of meta commentary or, like, meta discussion. We've been stuck doing, like, current events and, like, discussions about events.
Yeah.
The big political focus, right? But we haven't had, like, a meta discussion on society in a minute. So I feel like you were the perfect person to bring on for this one.
Thank you.
So at the time, well, okay, first let's welcome Tom to the greenhouse. Tom's an old buddy of mine. It's a pleasure to finally have you on.
I'm glad to be in the greenhouse.
It's a pleasure to have you. So when I pitched this concept to you, I want to say like a couple weeks ago or so, I was mainly considering this in the context of, and again, something we bring up on the show a lot is how short everyone's memory is and just how haphazard and non sequitur the discourse cycle is by design, right? But there had been this overstanding, overarching theme, especially from the political right this year, about like, it's just this like fixation and inability to let go of queer people and queer life as this cultural boogeyman here in the United States.
Right.
You could argue that, you know, it's still something they're fixated on, especially like, you know, like yesterday, there was the horrible like PragerU documentary all over Twitter.
Yeah, the detransition one, right?
I'm like, there's no journalistic integrity in this one, but they took out Twitter ad space all day for it, you know, to exacerbate the culture war. And yeah. I felt like I should have had you on to discuss, you know, the role of religious life, particularly in the United States, and maybe, you know, religion as it pertains to the culture war that goes on these days, because that's something they cite as like their justification for this. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about protecting children, but it's, as we've talked about in past episodes, it's this, you know, fetishistic fixation on the nuclear family, this, you know, post-World War II model of like suburban life, and these postures of evangelical Christianity, but what they seem to be putting on display is just it's darkly funny in the lightest sense to watch them get worked up about queer people. And in a practical sense, especially for a lot of this year, it's been bad.
It's been scary to see. Yeah, as like a for those who don't know, I am like a transgender man. I've been on testosterone for like a year and a half, almost 2 years now. So like, I do live like in a queer space. I like, most of my friends are queer. Like, you know, I live that life, and it is scary to see like Republicans on like the national debate stage say like, we need to like, you know, take care of transgenderism, like whatever that means. Yeah, and none of that shit exists in a vacuum either. You know, it's all like kind of built in together. But my research in school was primarily about the Catholic Church as it relates to this, which does have some intersection with evangelicalism. They're kind of aligned politically in a fragile way right now regarding like abortion and queer rights. But the Catholic Church does have like some differences in how it like sees those things and how like the Vatican and stuff like that plays into it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in addition to, there is a concrete difference between, you know, American Catholicism versus American evangelicalism, but they seem to, or at least there seems to be the co-optation of Catholicism for the culture war lane, right? I don't necessarily think that, I mean, you can talk about, you know, the political behavior of American Catholics as a later point, right? But you know, since like 2016 onwards with like the weird rightward turn we've been taking, you could argue it's always been happening, but it's like been exacerbated since those years, right? Mm-hmm. There's like the formation of like the tradcath online subculture. Yeah. You know, to me, it always seems like very put upon, highly online, really more focused on culture war grievance than anything else. But what do you make of the tradcath cohort, and like, where do they fall into things?
They kind of freak me out a little bit. They're basically like, there's like kind of a spectrum where if you kind of go on like they call themselves the center right, but they're actually pretty far right. It's Bishop Robert Barron. He's kind of like ahead there. And then he's got like a media conglomerate called Word on Fire. And Word on Fire posits itself as a center politically, but they collab all of the time with Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, like all the people in that space. They're kind of like the baby intro to tradcast. And then like if you go further down that rabbit hole where you're like, oh, I like Jordan Peterson, I wonder what other Catholics think about him, that's when you get into spaces where it's like the Pope isn't really the Pope because he's too far left, and like Latin Mass only. When you go to Latin Mass, you have to find like a Latin Mass wife who's gonna have six kids with you, and you're gonna live on a farm. It's very like,
yeesh, the
neo-Nazi like fascist like ideal of like living on a farm, like on your own with your wife and all your kids, like raising a white family, you know, stuff like that. It kind of all intersects from there, but it doesn't really play out in real parish life very often. Because that is a very niche, like, online community where it's, like, people from all over the country are there. But it's, like, kind of harder to find, like, a whole parish that's just like that. So they kind of have, like, representatives in parishes. You know what I mean? Mm. It's, like, priests who are really into, like, that kind of online space will come in and start making changes. And the parishioners don't like it. Or like they'll get on parish councils and start making changes that other parishioners are like, what is this? I don't understand. So it's like a very like specific version of Catholicism that seems bigger online, but then when you get like into the actual parish world, they do get a significant pushback, I think, at least on the parish level. It's not counting like bishops and stuff.
It's good that you bring up the point that, you know, they seem bigger online than they are, at least, you know, on a parish-to-parish basis, right? And we've talked about the phenomenon of astroturfing, you know, on past episodes where you need to make up a grassroots movement or you need to inflate the amount of people that showed up to something. And this is a favorite tactic of the American right, you know, whether it's... you know, the lying about how many people attended Trump's inauguration to, like, you know, the Zoot Suit riot, or not, what was it, the Brooks Brothers riots, to, like, the Tea Party itself. You know, AstroTurf is this, it's a big strategy, but I think where it intersects with, like, highly online spaces has been, it's been unique. I don't know if I'm qualified to speak on it, but it is to the point where, like, the Tradcath posters really did do like a solid job, you know, getting all the Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro content addicts on board with like the aesthetic presentation of like an austere religious life. But really it's, you know, it's masking and trading in all the usual tropes of white supremacy.
Yeah. And then like they'll post pictures like, see my Latin Mass, like only parish, my SSPX, which is like the religious order that does Latin masses, we have like a full house every week, and like we have all these kids, and we're gonna take over Catholicism. But when you consider like a lot of those people are driving, you know, potentially hours to get to that church because it agrees with their viewpoints, so it's not really as condensed and popular as they say that it is. It's just that people who have the ability to get there do get there. You know what I mean? So it's like they're like, oh, there's so many of us, when really you just happen to all meet in one place.
Yeah.
I think that kind of falls in line. It's like, yeah, you drove 2 hours to get there. I don't think that's really like the parish you should go to. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like stuff like that. And then also like, they're also very loud online where it's like, you can't go to anybody's comment sections without seeing like 10 million posts that are like, God doesn't agree with this.
Yeah, bullshit like that, exactly.
Yeah, so it's like, it makes it seem bigger than it is. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, like, I've always been, like, questioning with faith, just to put that out there. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess the best way to describe my views is agnostic in that, like, you know, I don't formally see myself as an atheist, but I haven't practiced any real religion or any spiritual practice in a while.
Right.
So I've just been taking this, like, you know, it's above my pay grade view as the spiritual.
Like, affairs. I'll figure out in the afterlife, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I have an interest in this kind of stuff, right? Because it plays a role in human history. It plays a role, mm-hmm, in human society. And, you know, I don't think anyone is immune to, you know, seeking like a kind of mystical answer to certain things at times.
Mm-hmm. I think especially, sorry, I don't mean, you can keep
going. Oh, you're fine. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I read an article basically wondering why so many people are drawn to the Latin Mass, and not just the Latin Mass in the Catholic Church, which is the Mass basically in the 1960s, the Catholic Church redid its Mass so that it's all primarily in English, or whatever the language that's spoken in the area is. But before that, Mass would be in Latin. There's been a resurgence, not just in the Catholic Church, but in other like traditions. Like the Anglican Church has like a version that's done in like Old English. There's been a resurgence of interest in those, and people were wondering like why. And part of it is that people are like, we want something that's going to be the exact same every week, that's going to give us like a mystical sense of not belonging to the world for a moment, and giving us like a stable sense of identity and sense of belonging in a community that kind of exists outside the world, just for like a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm not sure if that really related to what you were saying.
No, yeah. it completely ties in. It completely makes sense. I think that proves the point, you know, of like, there is this form of Reddit atheism that is, you know, I think it's good that it's out of fashion.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, just being harshly rational for its own sake. Like, I don't think it's just not fun, frankly. And yeah. it is kind of soulless the way that, like, you know, you'll see some of these people argue online. But I think, like, you know, as like events post 2016 have pushed a lot of us into a more left-wing framework, as people are more, you know, conscious and aware of goings about in the world. Like, I do like question, or let me rephrase that. I do have considerations about why modern life is so alienating and so sad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it is just like, you know, capitalist realism as like an explanation. You know, just the stiff like amount of like loneliness people face in their day to day lives and the lack of community. That's also a factor, but I think, like, you know, there is like a spiritual emptiness in American culture to a certain extent, you know? I don't have a prescription for that, but it's something that, like, I think, you know, it has to be addressed at some point. And religion is at least, like, you know, that's one of the salves we have for that wound, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's like, you go to work every day and, like, you're just, like, grinding and, you know, you read the news and it's all bad things and you're wondering, like, what is this all for, you know? Or you, like, want something that makes you feel bigger than yourself, or gives you a sense of purpose in the world, or ties you back to, like, an ancient tradition that you knew that your family practiced, like, long before. And that's what draws you into, like, you know, highly traditional spaces like a Latin Mass Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. It's like, God created you to be here in this moment for a reason. This is what potentially the same worship that your ancestors did before you. So you're like creating generational ties. Like finding other people. And you're also subscribing to, at least in the sense of the Latin Mass, subscribing to a type of worldview where it's like, yes, there are two genders. Yes. yes, like marriages between one man and one woman. Like, yes, every week we go to church and that makes us like, I don't know, chosen in a way to be like part of God's evangelization project. Like that gives you like a sense of identity, a sense of purpose and a community all kind of wrapped into one, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the contradiction that like, I think we all tend to face, right? Where it's like, I think people have correctly identified certain aspects of religion to be, you know, oppressive or be limiting to like, you know, human needs. Yet it does also offer, you know, a connection to not only human history and shared history, but, you know, like how do you cope with knowing the unknowable stuff in this world? That is a salve it can soothe. So that was kind of the inspiration that contradiction has inspired a lot of the questions I've got for you today. So I guess, you know, it's greenhouse gaslighting. There's always an outline. I'm going to hit you with the first one.
Okay.
So in your estimation, what has religion become in our current historical moment, and more specifically in American society? Is it fully captured by institutions of control and market logic, or does it have redeeming aspects? And I think that's something we were kind of touching on before this.
Yeah, I mean, I think religion is a very broad term. And it is, like, in an academic sense, kind of difficult to define. Like, if you go to a football game and you get, like, an ecstasy from watching your team win, is that, like, a religious service? You know, like, some questions like that. But I know what you mean by the
religion. As a Red Wings fan, it is.
As a Red Wings fan, I belong to the Red Wings religion. also, for full disclosure, I am not a Catholic. I was. So when I talk about the Catholic Church, it's from like a point of interest, not a point of like personal, like I belong to this faith. So,
I can edit this part if you want, but what are you now?
I'm studying under a rabbi to convert to Judaism. So it's going to be, it's a long process and obviously I might discern out of it, but yeah. So
Mazel not tov. A Catholic.
Thank you. So, what was the question again? It was like, so what role does I think that obviously there are parts of religion that are very like culture war. Like I brought up Bishop Robert Barron. He's kind of like my nemesis in a way. He doesn't know who I am, but he's my nemesis. No. He basically runs this Word on Fire. It started out as just a YouTube channel where he was talking about just like, you know, this movie kind of ties into this theology concept. And like, if you're confused about this catechism topic, here's like an 8-minute explainer, whatever. And then he kind of turned into like a book, like a publishing company where he started producing like his own books. And then he became like a media company where he started like producing movies and videos. And now he's like this big conglomerate where he's like, you know, on Jordan Peterson's podcast, on Ben Shapiro's podcast, he's doing stuff with the Daily Wire. And he's like really far right.
No. Yeah, it's like he's you know, he's using his credentials as like a Catholic clergyman.
As a bishop, make a shitload of money.
Like, specifically in the right wing media ecosystem, yeah.
Yeah, specifically like he says that he's like drawing people into discussion, and if you try to push him on this and be like, why don't you ever talk to anyone who's even center left?
That's the thing. Like Jordan Peterson makes stupid money off of this stuff. Like all these guys are making ridiculous amounts of money off of this.
Oh yeah, it's I don't even want to know how much money that guy makes, but it's got to be in the millions. Like
let's look it up.
Yeah, Word on Fire. Word on Fire. I don't know how to. Right on Fire Catholic Ministries, fiscal year, June 2021, $17 million. That's a lot. They've got, and a lot of their stuff's like, it's like, they call it like really high quality evangelization stuff, where it's like, they sell you 3 books of the Bible for like $70, because it's like leather bound, but it's only like 3 of the books, and it's like,
I get that moment more and more where like Jesus smashed the tables inside the temple.
Yeah, that's the vibe. I think
I get that I understand that parable more and more.
Yeah, So you've got, like, that end of it where it's, like, people are obviously grifting. And then, like, people who are seeking, you know, are going to see, like, a billion ads for, like, stuff like Word on Fire or, like, all this stuff and be like,
oh, I got Word on Fire ads. And, like, there's nothing in, like, my algorithm that should have brought me that. And I'm getting, like, a why the Pope is too woke. And it's like, I'm not even Catholic. Where would you get that?
Bishop Barron uses the word wokeism. But he's a smart guy, I think. Like, he's educated anyway.
He's a smart ass, I'll give you that.
Yeah, he's, like, he knows a lot of philosophy, but he's not really able to, like, do anything aside from spit that philosophy back out at you. Like, I don't think he can really, like, synthesize it. This is not me insulting him, this is me observing him. But he says, like, wokeism, like, the wokists, with the most serious tone of voice ever. It's he'd be like, he'll say, like, Nietzsche was right, these wokists are coming for your family. And I'm like, he's never defined the word wokist before, and every time they ask, he's like, you know what I mean.
Like, you know, oh, I don't. Brother, yeah. this guy stinks.
Yeah, he's but it's just part of the grift, you know. It's like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know what wokist means. It can mean whatever you want it to mean. He doesn't have to define it. So there is certainly that aspect of it where it's like, yeah, we're capitalizing on this culture war thing, and we're gonna make some bank. But I also think that, like, there are, like, so many people who would define themselves as, like, quote unquote religious or not, or spiritual or not, who, like, practice religion in their everyday life in America, and that informs their decision. That informs their voting decisions. It informs their, like, daily living decisions. Like, and that's, like, an entirely different thing to me, I think. Like, those individual practices, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a vegetarian for, like, religious reasons, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like there's two separate worlds almost, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
no, I completely understand. Does that even answer the question?
No, it does. Like, you can't separate, you know, the genuine spiritual aspects of religion, even if they seem, like, more faint or more disparate these days. Yeah. Like, because it still exists in its true forms in some ways, we can't write off the whole thing.
Yeah,
that's something, like, and that's something I do believe.
Yeah, and, like, there's a lot of people. I think a lot of people have questions, like, what happens after we die? Like, is there a God out there? Like, when I'm just enthralled by a spider making a web, like, what's enthralling me? You know, like, stuff like that. And that's, like, human to ask, almost. You know, I'm not saying
absolutely, it, absolutely, but,
like, yeah. And then, like, my Catholic friends who are queer, they're just like, you know, I just belong to my parish. I don't pay attention to anything else. Like, I'm supposed to know who the Pope is. I'm supposed to pay attention to what my bishop says. But, like, who cares? Like, they don't like me. I don't like them. So there's that aspect of Catholicism, too, where it's like, yeah, I know I got a bishop. I know there's a Pope. But, like, who care? You know?
Which I guess, you know, that's the whole thing. And that's gonna get into probably our next question directly, right? Because just as much as there might be, you know, like the zealots who make everything worse for everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have the people who are just, you know, okay, it means whatever it needs to mean to me. I do my practice and I get the hell out of there, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the thing, is, like, you know, religion does mean things personally to different people, but also, like, religion has taken, like, different structural forms through the times, right? And this question, does religion and spirituality need a democratization of a kind? And what do you think things like consumer identity, online behavior, media structures have played on religious identity in America today? Which we have actually touched on a bit, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, see, I've got two examples here in my head. The first one being, like, the online spaces. During the, like, 2020, 2021, people were doing, like, religious services on Minecraft servers. And they're like, well, it's a space. We're gathered. If two or more are gathered, then, like, we're having, like, a Christian service. But we were starting to ask questions, like, what is gathering? If we're all in separate physical spaces, but we're all together on this Minecraft server.
Right.
So that was, like, one. And then the other one was the Vatican itself is starting to ask these questions. In 2021, Pope Francis, who in my head I call him Papa Franco, so if I call him Papa Franco, he started the synod on synodality, which is basically like he wanted. It's almost like you can't call it a democratization because that doesn't exist in the Catholic Church. But like, basically, he wanted to know what it was that lay people around the world were concerned about with their church, and then he wanted to bring those things to the front of a massive worldwide discussion within the church. To kind of be like, this is what the people are concerned about. These are the steps we're going to take to try to address those things. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're still in the process. It ends in 2024, but they did just finish the bishops' conference in the Vatican about the synod, where they talked about the issues that lay people had raised up during the diocese, like, information gathering stage, where they basically had, like, just, like, seshes where people could come and talk in local parishes. And they kind of compiled those into 7 continental documents. This is like, people on this continent are concerned about this. And then those were condensed and then discussed by the bishops. And also women had voting rights for the first time in a bishops' conference this October. And basically, like, just address the concerns that the lay people have brought up. So, in a sense, it was kind of like a democratization because this was the first time that women were able to vote. Probably one of the first times that, like, on this level of scale, lay people had, like, a voice of some kind. Like, not saying they haven't before, but, like, in this way. So, is anything going to be done? I don't know. Like, that's still up to the bishops to decide what they're going to do. But, like, so I think, does that kind of answer the question a little bit, like, about at least democratizing thing? Or at least the Vatican saw that the lay people wanted a voice in the discussion, and that they're realizing that they deserve a voice in the discussion. And this was their way of trying to address that, almost. So I don't know if that answered that portion of the question or not.
It answers part of the question, right? Let's maybe delve into this deeper, because, you know, this is one example of, like, you know, a major world religion, you know, trying to look downward from its, like, you know, highly vertical structure, right?
Yes.
And not every religion structure the same, you know, like,
no.
For reference, you know, I was raised Hindu, and that's like a highly regional, highly horizontal religion where, like, people will have family deities, different regions will worship different gods, and there's a whole pantheon. So, you know, like, I am used to people saying, like, yeah, we're allegedly the same faith, and, like, their day-to-day religious practice may look different from yours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But specifically in the American context, right, like, the American, like, evangelical church, if it could even be described as such a thing, it's not really a thing. It's, like, especially, like, Baptists, right? Like, they are all basically their own, like, each building is its own Vatican, and each, like, pastor is their own pope, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd argue that, there's just this, like, deep, deep, pervasive, gospel of, you know, like, Protestant work ethic, you know, you got yours, fuck everybody. If you're rich, that's because God wanted you to get rich. And any mistake you make, you don't need to be accountable because God will automatically forgive you. It's like a unique perversion of, like, Christianity in America, I think, that allows that to exist. Is that blasphemous? It's not blasphemous for me to say it, but I think, like, in practice, especially the way, like, the American right wing talks about religion and how they invoke and implement it in their day-to-day practice, it's one that it has been shaped by, you know, consumerism and, like, market logic, but then also, like, it exists within a space that also operates with consumerism and market logic. And there's been, like, a wholesale commercialization of religion in a broad context, you know, like, speaking as a Hindu, right? Like, or as someone who grew up, was raised Hindu, right? It's like, there's a whole suite of, like, gurus and babas who will sell, like, herbal products and, like, snake oil, you know, and they have their, like, reputations as a religious teacher. So people are like, you know, getting swindled by that. You have, you know, the massive self-help industry, counseling, camps, books and TV shows, and like the media industrial complex around churches in America, right? And that's not, we're not even getting into, you know, mega church tithing. So there is like that aspect of religion in America that seems like highly commercialized within the United States, and also I think one that encourages other faiths around the world to follow a similar market of commercialization.
Yeah, I was just, as another example of that, I was reading a couple months ago the Religious News Service. They had an article interviewing Wiccans about commercialization. Mm. And the older Wiccans were saying, like, yeah, you used to have to find another Wiccan who would take you to the woods and, like, show you their practice, basically. And you would have to find those things, like, yourself. But now a lot of people are getting into Wicca via Etsy kits. So there wasn't really any conclusion drawn there. It was just like, this is how different people see these faiths and how the internet has like popularized or like commercialized Wicca to the degree that people just like order these kits.
It's like, it's almost, it's all kitsch at this point, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And the older ones were upset because they were like, yeah, they're not getting that one-on-one interaction that I got to learn like about like the life cycle and like gods and stuff like that. They're getting it from like someone who they bought it from online. So they may never see somebody else face to face to talk about those things. And like, how does that affect the religion itself? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I would say it's bad.
I would also say it's bad. The article is neutral, but I would also say it's probably bad.
Yeah, no, and I think like there's one of those things where it turns into the chicken and the egg, right? Where it's like, as religion can get co-opted or, you know, suborned by right-wing political forces in a certain context, right? It also just reinforces a kind of like cheap and commercial, impersonal, you know, like practice in the religion that doesn't help people who came to it with sincere needs, you know?
Yeah, because a good portion of like belonging to a religious community and like practicing religion is like sociology, like the people you're around, the people you get along with, the people you agree with to an extent. So like a big portion of religion is like hanging out, you know, like getting together.
So it like all goes back to hanging out, like nine times out
exactly.
of ten.
Exactly. Like, what are we doing but hanging out? Whether we're like worshiping God, reading the Bible, having lunch after services, whatever, it's like hanging out. So like when you take the hanging out and turning it into buying something, I think that does do something very bad to what we think of as religion. I hope that was relevant. I'm sure.
No, I think it makes sense. And I think we've also addressed the next question a bit. Maybe we can just answer this question a bit more flatly then, is like, you know, at some level, is it possible to blame our materialist and capitalist worldview in an American cultural context for failings in modern religion and spirituality? And what would a world that corrects for that look like?
I mean, yeah, we could probably just blame that. Yeah. Just be like, capitalism kind of gets its fingers into everything.
Yeah.
And then like kind of perverts it. How would we fix it though? I mean, I feel like we're speaking about religion very broadly, still, but like in terms of like Catholicism, the Christian sense, I mean, getting back to what, getting back to what the gospels are about, you know, like, like, how do you like serve the poor? How do you fulfill like the duties that God had prescribed to people? You know, like this basic stuff that doesn't require spending a lot of money, or doesn't have to. But it would be hard to return to that when like buying things is so like baked into what we believe. Be good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess let's get to the next one, and I think this is the one that has been lurking in the background of this entire discussion.
Okay.
So we have talked about, you know, ties between religious orders and the right wing. But why do social reactionary forces keep finding ways to use or co-opt religion to its insidious ends? Is this a disservice to human spiritual practice?
Have you seen the Netflix show Midnight Mass?
Because it's heard about so many good things about it, but I haven't seen it yet.
It's about this question, where it's basically like, how do you take a parish that's like kind of regular and turn it into a religious fanaticism? And it's basically like creating like an us versus them kind of thing almost. It's been a while since I've seen that show, but if you watch like, or like if you even just go back to read the Dead Sea Scrolls, a lot of it is like, we are the children of light and they are the children of darkness. It's like us.
Oh boy.
Yeah, these are ancient, these are like before Christ, like but that kind of theme of like, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, is so easy to get into a religious space, because it's already like, because you're already like practicing things different from the people around you. It's not that far of a leap to say, well, we practice different because we're better than them, you know. I'm not saying that religions do that, or that that's a practice of like any specific church, but like, that's something that's easy to get into somebody's head, you know what I mean? Like, we are defending something true and good that they want to corrupt. Like, we as evangelical Christians believe that this, this, and this is what God wants for the world, and those queer people over there are the opposite of that. So we have to fight against them in this heavenly battle. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense, yeah, because it's like the us versus them dichotomy is like the most primal one in human existence, and I think like
literally tribalism, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like, to facilitate that, you need like, you need a social engine, and that's where like, you know, religion can come into play very powerfully when leveraged as a social engine. And you know, in an unrelated example too, because I this just had me thinking, is I don't know how familiar you are with like Hinduism and like Indian history and stuff. It's something I'm endeavoring to get better about, because I blame myself and a lot of the diaspora for basically having surface level culture and just basically being like good little mono minority kids, right? But there's this document that's important in a Hindu religious sense, but also in like understanding how societies were built, right? And this is called Manusmriti, or it translates to the laws of Manu. And basically it was this like priest who was like an advisor to a king, I think, wrote it. And the best way to summarize it is, it's like him laying out, this is how you implement a caste system, this is how you implement who maintains power and order in this society. And then you can, and basically like by verbatim just saying like, yeah, the peasants get shit because that's what we give them, and it's good that we do that, and the king can rule because he deserves to, he has the divine right to it. Like, I'm like broadly paraphrasing, I'm sure I'm saying a lot wrong, but the function of the document is to provide religious justification for a strictly ordered caste system, which structures your inequality in your society by birth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like that's that, as you mentioned with the Dead Sea Scrolls, and then also with, I guess, the laws of Manu, you know, these kind of illustrate to us that the political right, whether it exists as an independent entity or whether it rises out of religious forces or whatever its provenance might be in human society, it needs to leverage multiple social engines to facilitate its insidious goals, right? And religion serves to do that. And I think that, you know, as religion has been kind of suborned and commercialized and kind of stripped of its sincere value in some senses. Like, you know, people just aren't as religious as they used to be. I think people have more questions that aren't being answered. And I also think that, like, religion has kind of taken a backseat to other forces in society, right? The right has to invent other forces, like the culture war, you know, to accelerate and power its ends.
Yeah,
so religion, like, as a social engine, you know, that's a new way to look at this, I guess.
It's a tool, like, that they use, like a technology, like, and it's all driven by fear at the end of the day too, where it's like, if we don't demolish them, they are coming for us. Whether or not that's true, like, as a trans person, when people are like, trans people are trying to like take our kids, I was like, I don't give a shit about your kids, like, at all. Like, I am not trying away. Get them away from me or something. Like, I don't, I don't care if they, I don't care. But for them to, like, propel that us versus them thing forward, they have to believe that I'm some kind of threat to them. And, like, that's, like, children of darkness are, like, driven by the devil, you know? And we're the children of light, and we're driven by God. So, like, in the specific religious sense, it takes that guttural, like, primal fear, like, ew, that's weird and different, and turns it into something, like, that's weird and different because God says it's weird and different. Like, it's, it takes it and it just, it turns it into a holy war. That's what I was trying to say. Like, you know, you see that in the Republican, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that they were in a holy war. Like, this is a holy war against, like, the people trying to destroy our way of life. I've, like, pretty sure I've heard
that's been invoked.
It's
been invoked multiple times, and I think, like, even was it Jerry Falwell, or was it, I forgot which megachurch pastor coined the term culture war, right? But the invocation of the culture war was to harken back to holy war.
I didn't have any additional commentary to that. I just wanted to say, yeah.
Do you diagnose any particular spiritual ills or repeated observations you might have about American life?
I mean, there are a lot of things, like, basically, a lot of the mainline Protestant churches right now are concerned because their membership is going down, like, significantly. Like, when you look at, like, 1950s membership versus now, it's down, like, I can't give you a specific number, but it's a very steep drop. So, like, they're trying to figure out, like, why is that happening? And they're trying to experiment with different ways of bringing people back in, like, getting, like, youth ministries started. Like, what do the youth want out of their church? And I just, it concerns me that people are leaving the church. Not that I think people should go to church, but, like, but it's just, like, what's taking the place of that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how are people getting those answers to those questions we were talking about earlier, like, filled? And is that, like, a fulfilling way of doing that? Like, obviously, I don't think you need to go to church. I don't. So, like, but at the same time, it is like, well, if you're getting your answers from, like, Jordan Peterson, or if you leave religion and then you go down the alt-right pipeline or something and, like, get drawn into, like, stuff like that, that's really bad, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of, does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. And I think, like, I don't know. It's just, I kind of was in a different state of mind when I was writing some of these questions, but I think that what you're angling at kind of does speak to, like, there is this repeat problem of, you know, people not knowing what they need to do or having this sense of, like, a lack of fulfillment or a lack of purpose in their lives. Right.
Yeah. And then also, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but, like, just the fact that there's a lack of third spaces. Around,
yeah.
Like, and then it's like, well, church was the place where you could go for, like, meet people, get the parish picnic and stuff, whatever the fuck. if that's not the space where people are meeting other people, or like, and there's also not a lot of third spaces where you can just go to hang out, like, what's going to take the place of church when people don't go anymore? You know, like, what's going to be that space where people can just hang out? I don't know. That I think about that too sometimes, where it's like,
yeah, because it's not just churches, like it's like libraries, parks,
yeah,
civic centers, all of that. If
yeah,
as it comes back to, if people aren't hanging out, what are they doing?
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, you can hang out online. I'm not saying that's not valid, but like hanging out in person, I think, is important too. And it's like, I feel like there's fewer and fewer spaces to do that in, especially when you have to like pay to get into so many places. But like, yeah, I don't know. That was another concern that I have, but.
Yeah, no, I think that does address that. Like, yeah, I think the dark side of America's alleged freedoms is that, you know, we're allegedly free to do so much, but I think people definitely feel boxed in. People definitely have questions about what do I do with all this? And I think, again, just I think the deep questions of lacking a sense of sincerity because everything's so commercialized.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I definitely I diagnose as like a kind of spiritual problem in the U.S. You know, where like everything's so like materialistic. It's all consumerism drives every aspect of our lives. You know,
it's like every year during church, during like Advent, which is like the period before Christmas in the Catholic calendar, the priest would be like, don't forget that Christmas is about Jesus. It's not about buying presents.
Right.
There's so much pressure to get all these presents and to spend. It's like, that's not the point of the holiday. Yeah. The fact that you even need to remind people that every year, multiple times. what I mean?
Oh, no, exactly. I guess now we're going to tie it back to queer life with like these next four or so questions. You know, when it comes to queer life and religious life, these are almost presented as if they're incompatible by design. How and why?
I mean, I think that when you say like religion, I think a lot of people just think of like, you know, a big old church with a no gays allowed sign. But right. I think that queer religion, queer people can't, a lot of us like don't abandon our faith entirely, you know? It's like, yeah. We just like kind of have to change it, modify it, like queer it in a sense to fit like what we believe to be true. And that can mean a whole host of things. Like I've read about like trans women making like shrines in their homes for other trans women to visit. It's like, is that not a spiritual practice? Is it not a religion? Or mm-hmm. like, I get my tarot readings done by like a queer trans man mm-hmm. who's like deconstructed his faith, and he's come to the conclusion that like, yeah, there's gods out there and I can communicate with them via these cards, and I can help other people communicate with God via these cards. That's a religion as well. It's like, it takes a lot of like deconstruction, like work to kind of disentangle the harmful, patriarchal, homophobic, sexist, misogynistic parts of the faith that you were born into, and kind of like take what's good from that or what you believe to be true, and develop it into your own like queer sense of identity and self, and then find others who are doing the same. You know,
is that kind of I completely understand that. Yeah, because it's like the stereotype is that, you know, queer people are just like shut out of religious life, and then the immediate alternative is to go into like a kind of, you know, pop Reddit atheism, right?
Yeah.
But that
obviously there are people who are Reddit atheists. And considering the way churches treat LGBT people, I consider that valid too.
yeah. But it's like, you said, you know, that doesn't describe everybody's situation.
No, and then of course there are also like actual like brick and mortar religious institutions that are queer affirming. Like the Episcopal Church, certain strains of Judaism, like, you know, it's like none of this exists in like black or white, right?
Right.
I go to a synagogue that's like a lot of queer people go to the synagogue too, and it's a very queer affirming place. And I consider that just as valid as like my friend who talks to God via tarot cards. Like it's all great, you know.
Yeah. This is a bit of a tangent. I think that might be necessary to go down to. It's like there is a reason. Like I harp on Reddit atheism. I'm calling it that as like kind of pernicious, right? Or it's malicious. Mm-hmm. Because there's this concept of Christian atheism, and people like are like, you know, what does that mean? Well, basically, like, you know, if you're an American white in this presumption, right, you know, and you grew up some kind of Christian and you say, well, you know what, I don't believe in this anymore. You still have to deal with like how much of your social reality and mm-hmm. worldview has been influenced by growing up Christian, right? And yeah. If you just like discard it wholesale without, you know, examining the worldview or unpacking that. And as you mentioned, you know, these people are deconstructing it as part of, you know, querying their religious and spiritual views. Right. If you don't do that, you just become like a Sam Harris style dork, you know, where it's just like,
it's like when I said that, I think that like that kind of atheism is valid. I didn't mean to be like, oh, I don't mean like when atheists think like they're dunking on all of religion when really they're just dunking on their specific brand of Christianity they grew up in. Like that's harmful, I think. But I think that queer people who come to the conclusion that there is no God and they don't want to really affiliate with faith, but then they also do that deconstruction to be like, these are the harmful thoughts that I have to work through because of my religious upbringing. That's like different to me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
no, when you're like a Sam Harris type, that's just annoying.
Yeah, because like all these people, like they do the same like level of like dick riding for white nationalism that the trad-cath types do. But, mm-hmm. you know, they do it with a different aesthetic sensibility. That's really the difference.
Yeah, like the religion is poison thing is so like, oh my God. It's like that's so offensive to like faiths that aren't Christian or that faiths of them that have been like persecuted by other faiths. You know, it's just like, no.
No, that's exactly it, right? It's like, you know, you have to, if you can't unpack, especially if you grew up in the West, that like there is such a thing as a Western framework and a Western lens that mm-hmm. you need to willingly unpack, you know, you're not going to make it.
Not going to make it.
You're not going to make it. So, religious reform on LGBTQI issues. Is this to accommodate something new? As some people criticize it, you know, like, oh, you're just trying to be, you know, liberalize your church so you can get more followers. Or is it a return to a kind of past that is unconcerned with mortal trappings?
I think it's kind of like a mix of both. Because when you consider, like, yeah, defining yourself as, like, gay, quote-unquote, or, like, bisexual is a relatively recent phenomenon. It's, like, you could have, like, attractions to the same gender, but you wouldn't, like, use, like, a label like gay to describe yourself before, mm-hmm. like, the 1800s, like, onward. So, in a sense, like, when churches, like, create these policies that are, like, we include LGBTQ individuals, that is modernization in a sense, like, yeah, you're trying to like clarify your stance here, and you probably mm-hmm. had to rework some of your former stances to get there. But at the same time, it's like, as we've learned more, we live in a society. As we're existing in a society, this is how people with this experience choose to define themselves. Like, I'm transgender. 200 years ago, I'd probably use a different word. I don't know. Maybe I would never really conceive of myself of this way 200 years ago. I don't care. But here and now, I define myself as transgender. How is that going to play into, like, my relationship to the Torah, for example? Like, right. How is that going to affect my relationship with, like, these ancient, like, rituals that we do on Shabbat, you know? Like, so, like, answering those questions, I think, is important to do. And it's also, like, in a freeing sense, because you're not, like, trapping yourself in, like, a previous generation's ideas of what is, like, what a person is, you know what I mean? So I think it's kind of like a mix of both. Does that make sense? I feel like I asked.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. Because yeah, there is the practical sense of like you got to get recruitment up in all sorts of social spaces these days, right? Mm-hmm. But then yeah, like I think that you know people who understand like the deeper meaning of community, and you know as we keep coming back to this, hanging out. You gotta let more people into the circle. You gotta let go of some preconceptions. You gotta hang out with more people, you know?
Like yeah, and just to be clear, like not all religions like proselytize or like want to proselytize. So like
mm-hmm.
So a lot of them are like clarifying like Judaism, for example, isn't gonna try to convert you to being Jewish. But they do amend their stances on things, at least the conservative Jewish movement that like I'm a member of a synagogue in. They modify their stances every now and again to kind of reflect the signs of the times, basically. So it's not really to like try to get new people in so much as like clarify what we should be doing, you know?
Yeah. Does that make
sense? Yeah.
No, that makes sense. You got to change your priorities, you know, periodically.
Yeah.
So we did touch on this a bit earlier, right? About trauma as a disconnect. So people sometimes have a good reason to distrust, you know, organized religion or religious people, especially if they've been, you know, like kicked out for being gay or, you know, they underwent something traumatic mm-hmm. as part of their practice, right? You know, I can understand why people, you know, gain distrust from trauma. It makes perfect sense. But this also indicates to me that we are also somewhat societally conditioned into invalidating the spiritual lives of people we deem the other. So this can mean, you know, like from someone who is, you know, like a religious person thinking that queer people don't have a spirituality and not knowing about all the ways in which, you know, queer people exercise a certain kind of spirituality or may even engage in what they might deem mainstream. Or vice versa, you know, is like you might write off everybody in your previous religious, you know, background if you got kicked out of it for being queer. You know, you might write them all off as fake. And there might be some people who have a sincere approach to it or may not want it to be, you know, as bigoted a space. So do you think like this like major disconnect? Is this something inherent to religion as a concept, or is this like an outgrowth of our heavily individualized and alienated society?
Well, I think the first thing I thought of, and maybe this is related, maybe it isn't. I got bit by a dog really bad when I was a toddler. And then for a long time after that, I thought every dog was going to bite me. So it took me a long time to be like that one dog.
Right.
And that wasn't even a bad dog because you can't really prescribe good and bad to animals, I don't think. So, like, it was just a dog being a dog and me being a toddler. So now I'm like, I see a dog, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, it's going to bite me. But for a long time, I was afraid that every dog was just a moment away from snapping.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of related in the sense that, like, yeah, I was traumatized by this incident that happened to me. And now I have to work through and be like, I can't generalize that every dog is going to bite me. And as someone who has been like kicked out of a Catholic church, I think it relates in the sense that like, yeah, I was really mad. And every time I saw like Catholicism anywhere, I was like, yeah, fuck those guys. Yeah. They're all like, that's a wasteland over there. But recognizing that like, it's not black and white. They're transgender Catholics. They're LGBT Catholics. They're like Catholics who are in same-sex relationships and are very happy. There are Catholics who are choosing to be gay Catholics who choose to be celibate. It's all very large,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And like recognizing that largeness, I think was the key to me being like, okay, that church kicked me out because of these very gross ideals that they have and are pervasive within Catholic culture. Yes, but that doesn't mean that every Catholic prescribes to those ideas. Does that answer the question?
It does. It does. Like, I think when I wrote this outline, we were just in a different time culturally in society, I felt like, right?
Yeah.
But I think like again, like the right that has been exacerbating the culture war has really made this like big push to write off all queer people as like godless in some sense. And that continues to be like a harmful trope in a lot of spaces. But then also like there is like a, you know, like there are segments of the queer community that just abandons mainstream religion for very understandable like reasons. So there's a justifiable aspect to it, but then there's just, you know, what the American right's gotten up to, and like that's something I resent.
I know that at the Chicago, it was the Florida Pride March. I have a friend in Florida who went to the Florida Pride March. Religious communities were allowed to march with them, but they were asked to like stay in a separate area. That way that queer people who didn't want anything to do with it, like didn't want to see it, didn't want to engage with it at all, didn't have to. And those that were okay with meeting with religious people could go over there and talk. I just thought that was really cool, you know, to be like, we acknowledge that a lot of people are really traumatized by religion, so we're going to not force them to see religious organizations in their queer celebration space. But then also at the same time, allow those religions to be there. I don't know if that was relevant or not.
it is relevant, and maybe it's just like it's a discussion that's ongoing that maybe we can't fully address in this space, right? But it's like, you know, how do you reconcile the potential for like a liberatory and fulfilling spiritual experience that religion could offer with the very real bad things that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the fact that they wanted to be in a pride space at all, I think kind of says the kind of religious organization that they are.
Right.
But that still doesn't invalidate why somebody wouldn't want to approach or see them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I got our last formal one on the outline here.
What?
So is there a need to reconcile queer and religious spaces, or is the idea of reconciling them at all a contradiction that the status quo is imposing on us?
That's a good one. I think it kind of goes back to what you were just talking about, where it was like, I think there, that's a good question. I mean, it goes back to my friend who reads tarot at a farmer's market, you know, like he does like queer tarot readings. Like, he's reconciled, you know, he talks to God that way. He believes in one God, so he talks to that God that way. I think if anybody needs to do reconciling, it is definitely religious institutions who are homophobic, because they're the ones who are missing out on what queer people have to offer and like our experiences with God and what we could do to inform them. Yeah, that's what I got, I think.
I think that's a fair read. I think that's a fair read indeed. I would say, though, that, like, yeah, there's probably, like, a certain sense in which, like, the old problem of, how do I put this? Like, the way people talk about queer life, a certain kind of person will talk about it, is, like, they treat it like it's a new problem, allegedly, and that, like, you know, it's because of, like, the recent, more for, like, open and accepting climate on queer people, as like this, like, you know, like people treat it like history began that day and not like queer people have always existed throughout time, throughout history. We have records to prove it throughout the world. And also think about all of it that wasn't documented. Think about all of it that happened, you know, through the course of human history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's sad and beautiful to think of all the same that, you know, queer people have basically existed throughout history with us, you know?
Yeah. And
yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I'm thinking of a book. It's called The Soul of the Stranger by, I always forget the name, Joy Ladin, I think. She is the first transgender woman. Let me look up where she. Former David and Ruth Gottesman Chair in English at Stern College for Women at Yeshiva University. Okay. First openly transgender professor at an Orthodox Jewish institution. She basically wrote a book. She's exploring like being a trans woman and connecting to scripture as a trans woman. And like seeing how God, when God created the world, like he created like light and dark. But he also created like dawn and dusk. You know, where it's like there's a mix of light and darkness. So she finds herself like in the middle spaces almost, where it's like, yeah, God created this black and white, but here I am in the gray, which also exists because we can see it. So like trying to find like, oh, like rebellious figures in scripture, like characters that like defied like gender expectations or like defined like expectations generally speaking, and like seeing like that's a queer person right there. Like that's somebody who went against what the societal norms were and like followed what God wanted them to do, you know? Like Jonah, when he was being a prophet, he didn't want to be a prophet, but God told him to go be a prophet, and like he's like, you know, marginalized in the sense that he's a prophet and prophets can get killed. And he doesn't want to be a prophet. But yeah, he's like, that's the identity that God gives him. And that's what he has to do with his life. So she basically is like, how do I like connect to these characters? How do I trace back the my lineage as like a queer woman through these characters and through this history? And I thought it was just like a beautiful thing to really like reflect on. Even though like queer, quote unquote, in the sense that we use it today might be different from what it was used like 100, 200 years ago, that there's still that lineage, you know, like we've always like existed. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that might be just be the thing is like, do they need to be reconciled, or is it more of like, it's not about reconciliation, it's more of like accepting what has always been true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I came into this discussion, you know, not sure if I would answer some of these questions. It seems like a lot of these are going to be ones that, you know, like we probably will have to explore through the duration of all our lives, you know?
Yeah, pretty big questions.
Yeah, you can't answer all of this in a single podcast, right? But I think the spiritual condition we find ourselves in today and throughout our lives is one that, whether or not you try to address it with like, you know, a traditional religious framework, it's one that I don't think is worth ignoring. It's one I consider. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, the personal context that it sits in. It's also the broader sociopolitical one it stands in. And I think that, you know, while the current cycle of discourse that we find ourselves in may seem a little bit distracted by other affairs, I think it is just worth acknowledging that like a lot of hay was made domestically about demonizing and really doing whatever it took to alienate polite society from queer people.
Right.
And it was done in the name of religion. But, you know, like we have to, I think, like have these considerations of, you know, the culture war as like a right wing project. And we have to be cognizant of the ways in which religion can and will be co-opted by these forces if we want to resist them.
Yeah, I think a good question to like ask every now and again is be like, or like something to consider is like, who owns religion? Like,
yeah,
because it's like everybody does. Like if you have a spiritual practice, if you don't, like whatever, like religion is like what you make of it. So I think when people say like, oh, the far right like owns religion, like religions are like, you know, spaces where us versus them, all that stuff. That's like kind of reductive in a sense of what religion is and like what spiritual practice can be. And then I think it also fuels the far right as well to be like, yeah, religion does belong to us, you know? That makes sense. Sorry.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. That is everything I had written up on the outline. Is there anything else you might have thought of, Tom, or something that we haven't considered?
I don't think so.
Any closing thoughts for the listener then?
Closing thoughts? Have fun. I don't know.
Have fun, hang out, be
yeah, go hang out.
Go hang out, be cool. Like
be chill.
All right. It was great having you on finally.
Yeah, it was glad great to meet you.
Yeah, it was glad just having like a chill, far out discussion for once on the podcast. Like this was refreshing.
Anything completely wrong.
If you cite this podcast in your term papers, like we've mentioned before, you deserve that zero.
You're citing me. You deserve it.
Is there anything you'd like to plug before we start closing this out?
Go look up which charities you can donate for Palestinians.
Yeah, there is anera.org. I sent some money through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, anera.org is it's probably one of like the most reliable places to donate, I'd reckon.
Yes. Go donate to them.
Yes. Free Palestine. That's what I plugged this week.
Fuck the Republicans. Can I say that? Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. If you can't say it here, where else can you say it?
I can't say it anywhere if I can't say it here.
Exactly. Well, this has been another episode of Greenhouse Gaslighting. I'll have the, links to where else you can find us on the internet in the show description. If you don't know where to see the show description, wherever it says see more on your podcast app, that's where it's at. And everything's on Linktree now. I don't know where the internet is going to take us. I don't know how long Twitter is going to remain active, but good God.
Yeah, Twitter's a mess. That's a mess.
The website don't even work half the time. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? But as always, you can find everything in the Linktree. Thanks again, dear listener, for tuning in. This show would not be going on this strong if it wasn't for listeners like you. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.